closing argument. Walter Hudson. Pursuing happiness thoughtfully. 8 to 10 weeknights on Twin Cities News Talk. AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
Not since election night 2016 has President Donald J. Trump had such a victory. This is monumental. I was about to use the word unbelievable, but it's entirely believable. We saw this coming, right? When the news came that the Mueller report was released on Friday, I told you that night that by the time we came around to talking about it tonight, we would know that there's nothing in this thing. No indictments. We knew that on Friday. No indictments, no new bombshells, no new major information that reshapes our perception of this administration or the campaign in 2016 or the relationship with Russia or Russia's involvement in our democracy. And here we are. And it has been a fascinating weekend watching the reactions pour in from all parties concerned, but of course, most especially the mainstream media and the Democratic Party. They just don't know what to do with themselves. And see, this is the problem. I've talked about this before. And, to be completely frank, it's something that the Republicans do too, but they don't hold a candle to the Democrats. The problem you have when you set up your constituency, you set up your followers, your adherents, when you set them up to expect something that is not going to happen. You know, the Republicans did this with the repeal of Obamacare. And there's other instances we can point to. When you set your followers up to expect something to happen, which is not going to happen, which you have no intention of following through on, and in this case, which you have no reason to believe will ever come true, then you have to deal with the fallout. And here it is. No evidence of collusion. No collusion is the headline. Here's the 4 points that we're going to keep coming back to as we discuss this tonight. And by the way, you can give us your reaction tonight, live and local. 651-989-5855 is the number to join us. Brianne, once again, to produce the show. Brad just can't get enough of serving his country.
Absolutely.
Wasn't Brad just gone for a whole week, Walter? Yes, he was. And now he's once again gone for a whole week because they just need him that much.
Maybe he's a superhero or something like that.
He's the hero we need, not Captain the one America. We deserve.
Exactly.
Yes. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, streaming at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and your iHeartRadio app. We're here 8 to 10 weeknights. Appreciate you joining us. Here's the 4 points, as I see them, that emerge from this revelation, this non-revelation, to be more precise. And as we go through the various articles and perspectives and takes on what's happening here, these are the 4 things that we're going to keep coming back around to as being evidenced by those views. Number one, the credibility of major institutions has been decimated. And I just want to take a moment to define the word decimated. Like to decimate something, like strictly speaking, the deca part of that word is a reference to a tenth, right? It's the idea is you've destroyed something so completely that only a tenth of it remains, or it's been divided into tenths. The credibility of major institutions has been decimated. And I'm talking about institutions like the media, of course, Congress, not that they had a whole lot of credibility to begin with, but what little they had has been decimated. And perhaps worst of all, and this really is, even more than the media, this really is something that we're going to have to contend with going forward for at least a generation. The credibility of the intelligence community, the United States intelligence community, has been decimated by this process. Think about the effect that's going to have going forward. The intelligence community was politicized through this process. The intelligence community was revealed to be a major part, a major organ within the deep state, focused on a political objective of working against a sitting president of the United States. How can we trust them ever again? How can we trust those institutions while the people who currently occupy them remain? That's a question we're going to have to contend with. Point number 2, the players behind this investigation and the slanderous claims which leaked from it need to be held accountable. Because, you know, what we've heard from day one and what we're continuing to hear even now from the delusional is that Trump has undermined our democracy. He undermined our democracy. And the Russians, you know, one that you just heard at the top of the hour news, Klobuchar is sticking by the line of, well, we know that the Russians interfered, you know, regardless of whether or not there's evidence of collusion, which, of course, was the entire point of this investigation. We do know that the Russians interfered. They undermined our democracy. Really? Who, what do you think, like, what sane person, I know there's some lefties who listen, what sane Democrat wants to call in 651-989-5855 and explain to me which of these things is more harmful to our democracy, okay? A, here's your multiple choice. A, Russian Facebook ads, Russian tweets, Russian social media. Just the fact that that exists, that's your first choice. That's A. That's the Russian interference in our election. B, a media that is completely negligent in its job to provide any sort of objective perspective, news, coverage with integrity, facts for people to utilize in their own judgment. A Congress that has weaponized its own processes. An intelligence community that has allowed itself to become a political tool. What is more of an undermining of our democracy than those things? You now have a scenario whereby the mechanisms, the organs that we depend upon in order to keep our democracy healthy, in order to keep people informed, in order to provide people with perspective, in order to give people the tools they need in order to clearly and precisely understand the truth of what is happening in the world around them, those organs have cancer. They are sickly. They are dying. Some of them are dead. So how does our democracy as a whole, as a body, proceed without those vital organs? None of that holds a candle to a Russian tweet. It's astounding to me. And, you know, point number three. Now they want to go after him, Trump. They want to go after the president for obstruction of justice. They're latching on, you know, this thin little thread that dangles from the summary of the Mueller report, whereby it says that, well, we can't clear him entirely on obstruction of justice. And there is evidence on both sides of the question as to whether or not the president might be guilty of obstruction of justice, but we draw no conclusions. We make no distinction. They're clinging to that hope, and they're saying, well, there you go. We need to see the full report. We need to continue the investigation. We need to get to the bottom of this. Trump isn't off the hook. He's not off the hook yet. We got to get to the truth now. Let me ask you this, and this is a point that I've raised throughout this entire thing, the past couple of years, and I'm surprised that more people aren't approaching it from this perspective. As has been pointed out, you know, Sean Hannity's on the screen here in front of me in the studio monitor, and he's done a good job of pointing this out. As has been pointed out, the indictments that have come out of this Mueller investigation have been almost 201 process crimes, not actual criminal activity unto itself, but crimes involving the process that you get trapped in, you know, things like lying to the FBI, lying to Congress, things of that nature, that have nothing to do with an actual primary offense or primary violation. You need to explain to me how somebody can obstruct justice, the dispensation of justice, the administration of justice, when no injustice has been done. That's the problem here. Like, if there is no crime, which is apparent, which is basically what Mueller has said at this point, there is no primary crime that the purpose for the special counsel did not pan out. How, if there was no injustice that needed to be corrected, then how can you obstruct justice by impeding that investigation? That's what you need to answer to me. Now, I understand that by the letter of the law, they can still get him. Right? Like, by the letter of the law, they can still get anybody for quote-unquote obstruction of justice. What I'm suggesting, and I'm not the first one to suggest it, is that that is wrong. That is morally wrong. the idea that, well, we can't prove that you murdered somebody, which is what we were going after you for, so now we're going to try to nitpick your interviews and the testimony and the ways in which you interacted with law enforcement under pressure, and we're going to find something that we can charge you with that has nothing whatsoever to do with murder, but will still get you thrown in jail. That is double jeopardy. That is harassment. That is a abuse of power. And, you know, this is something that ought to be particularly of concern. You know who should be mostly concerned about that more than anybody else? The social justice warriors. The social justice warriors who are constantly telling us and warning us about racial disparities and institutional power and the white supremacy and the structure of the hierarchy that the marginalized are under the thumb of. If you really believe all of that, if you believe that that's the reality, that there's a white supremacy, that there's a patriarchy, that there's this hierarchy of capitalism that's crushing the small guy, then you should be fundamentally, principally opposed to process crimes standing onto themselves. Now, you know, if somebody's guilty of an actual crime, if somebody did commit that murder, and in the process of the investigation, it's determined that on top of the murder, they also obstructed the administration of justice related to that crime, then by all means, tack on an extra, whatever the penalty is, tack on an extra 10 years to their life sentence or whatever it is you're going to do. But standing onto itself, well, there's no crime here, but, you know, we think he lied to us about where he ate last week. Therefore, he's going to jail. That is unjust, fundamentally. And then the last thing that we're going to keep coming back to here as we discuss this tonight. This whole process of investigation, and this is going to bear out particularly in one of the articles that I have to share with you here tonight, because they overtly say it. They overtly admit it. They're not even trying to hide it. This whole process of investigation has now become a non-veiled political strategy. The whole point of the investigation is to create a political narrative. Does anybody doubt this? Is anybody prepared to tell me, again, if you're lefty, by all means, call in, demonstrate how I'm wrong. Is anybody prepared to tell me at this point that that this investigation has anything whatsoever to do with substance? That it is anything other than a political strategy to take the Democrats up to 2020? And as such, you know, the Democrats find themselves in a, unfortunately, all too familiar for us Republicans, position, but a losing position. That's why it's familiar. And the losing position of having their only strategy being continuing to drum up doubt. Ad hominem. That's basically the strategy at this point. Investigation into ad hominem. He's a terrible guy. And we're going to keep insinuating. We're going to keep throwing spaghetti at the wall. We're going to see what sticks. We're going to keep investigating. There's no stop to it. We got to get him on obstruction of justice. We got to get him on something. By God, he's guilty of something. Again, I go back to the social justice warriors. You know the people who were most likely to be accused in completely abstract terms of, quote, being guilty of something? Go back to 1960. 1955, black men being harassed by the police, being detained for no reason, being denied employment opportunities. Why? Well, they're guilty of something. Appealing to you, social justice warrior, appealing to your own avowed standards, your own avowed principles, isn't it morally wrong to assume that somebody is guilty of, quote, something, with no evidence to suggest specifically what it is, and to therefore continue to investigate them until you find something, because we just know something's there. Let's keep digging and digging and digging and digging. Let's keep searching and searching and searching and searching. And there are multiple constitutional amendments that speak to this. The idea that you can't just keep digging through somebody's papers until you find something. You have to have probable cause. You have to have a reason to start with, to justify your investigation. And it can't be, I don't like the cut of his jib. I don't like the way he looks. I don't like the color of his hair. I don't like the way he talks. So let's investigate him. That is a miscarriage of justice, if there's anybody amongst the left who cares about such things anymore. 651-989-5855. Closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM.
1130 and 103.5 FM.
Here are a few random facts to keep in mind. Since May of 2017, 533,074 web articles have been published about Russia and Trump Mueller, generating 245 million interactions, including likes, comments, and shares on Twitter and Facebook, according to data from social media analytics company NewsWhip. That's from Axios. And then looking over at Newsbusters, Nets gave whopping, or the networks gave a whopping 2,284 minutes of coverage to the Russia probe. Then from the Daily Caller, they have this whole list. We're not going to go through it. Maybe we'll come back to it at some point during the program. They got a list of, what is this here, down to 11, 12, 13, 14, 16. 16 instances of false or exaggerated reports from the media leading up to what we now know from the release of the Mueller report, which is that there ain't nothing there. No evidence of collusion. Now, again, I go back to this premise that's been offered, particularly as regards to Russia, right? Well, the talking point that we've continually heard is that Russia undermined our democracy. How? Well, by spreading false information. Really? So that's your premise, eh? That one undermines democracy by spreading false information. Okay, well, answer the fact that there are 533,000 plus web articles regarding Russia, Trump, Mueller, and the investigation. 2,284 minutes of coverage on the networks for this non-story. Produced, by the way, produced, like, you know, you could probably, there's probably a fair number of blog posts and what have you in the first number regarding web articles, but we're talking about the actual news networks here with the 2,284 minute number. So you're talking about people who are avowed journalists with editorial processes in place for determining whether or not something is newsworthy, who have given laser focus coverage to nothing, to a non-thing, to a thing that doesn't exist for 2 years. That sounds an awful lot like undermining our democracy to me. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, 651-989-5855. Lines lit up. Let's start with Mike in St. Paul. Welcome to the program.
Oh, good evening, Walter. A couple points, and then I'd like your opinion on some. First, I thought one is either guilty or not guilty, and then you are exonerated by definition if you are found not guilty.
Right,
or in
that's
this
right.
Case, there's no evidence.
That's right.
So, I mean, the semantics that Mueller is using there, I think there was a reason for that. But second opinion, what I still think, and of course you've heard this opinion, that the whole reason behind this is to teach a lesson, and that is that no one outside of that political class
right.
ever put their family or themselves through this again. And then finally, it is evident that there is a two-tier justice system in this country. And people, this is real. And I'm wondering, what do you think the outcome will be if you know, the little guy, so to speak, realizes that, hey, this government is corrupt, and, you know, they'll throw me in jail, and anybody else can walk if they can, you know, if they know the right people. Do you think that'll erode the system, or will we just forget about this?
I think to a large extent we are already seeing the erosion of the system. I mean, when you look at, and I don't have the historical data in front of me, but when you look at the disengagement, the number of people who are choosing to disassociate with both the Republican and the Democratic parties and identify as independent, when you look at voter participation nationwide, When you look at the trust in our institutions, trust in government, trust in the media, you know, trust in the intelligence community at this point, which it's unbelievable that they have been wrapped up in this and their credibility has been decimated as well. We're already seeing the fruits of that. I mean, our discourse and the dysfunction of government. Consider the fact that we are continuing to fund our federal government through continuing resolution. There hasn't been a budget produced in over 10 years. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're already seeing what happens when what you suggest takes place. Now, can it get worse? Yeah, it can get worse. Do I know what that'll look like? The only other thing I can do is point to the closest analogs we've seen worldwide. So, you know, I think of things like Greece. I think of things, you know, like Venezuela, frankly, if the Democrats can get their way. But on the good side, on the flip side, I think we will also see instances of people kind of shrugging off the national conversation and engaging in a kind of lived libertarian experience, so to speak, where they pay less attention to government and kind of shrug off its edicts and just do whatever they want.
How about the mega media? I mean, you think the true believers are still going to be in the Kool-Aid line?
Or
is there going to be a pause here and go,
No pause.
Five or 2,000 subpoenas, 500 witnesses, and nothing?
No.
20 Democrat lawyers and nothing?
I've seen no evidence of it. I've seen no evidence of it whatsoever. I appreciate the call, Mike. Yeah, I mean, I guess Glenn Greenwald, who's a big lefty, but does apparently have some amount of journalistic integrity, or at least a sense of integrity, has been an outlier who has, from the get-go for quite some time now, been warning his fellow leftists, hey, you know, you guys are pushing this thing a little hard. We don't really know anything. There isn't really any evidence that this is going to backfire on you. And he has been castigated and marginalized as a result. And today he's on Twitter saying, hi, guys, ready to come back when you'll have me on MSNBC to tell you I told you so. Let's talk to Richard from Denver. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Walter. How are you?
Good.
Hey, I don't know what it will take for a liberal person to be, how many more lies that their psyches can take. They were told by their media that Hillary is going to win by 92 to 98%. Remember that?
Right. Yep.
and then, I mean, and these things just keep happening. We had the Nathan Phillips on the mall with the Indian drummer in the face.
Mm-hmm.
We had Jesse Small. I mean, it goes from the social to the political and everywhere in between. These people's media just lies to them over and over and over, and they just stand tall and they hang in there. And I'm just wondering if you think it's a mental condition or a psychological condition, or if these people are just so emotionally invested in their positions that they can't shake it. But
it's a religion.
Have any respect for anybody over the age of 40, especially if they're a lawyer or they're a college professor and they're still a rock hard liberal. I can't understand it. I wonder if you have something perspective to add to that.
I have a difficult time understanding it as well and providing people with moral benefit of doubt. Now, you know, rank and file, you know, people who aren't paying a whole lot of attention and they just kind of come up with their opinions as they're dispensed to them in 30-minute bursts at the end of the day after a hard day's work, that's one thing. But folks who have actually looked into it, who have dug deep, who are on the level of like professor like you're talking about, that's I can't really give you much benefit of doubt on that one. Appreciate the call, Richard. Yeah, you know, and again, I think one of the potential upsides of what we're seeing here is that we are seeing the death. This is the emperor has no clothes moment, where we are seeing the death of the big lie. Like, you can't maintain a lie anymore in today's society because of the internet, because of social media, because of the number of eyes and ears and minds that are analyzing the problem. And so what we're seeing is the inertia of the old way of doing things. Democrats are continuing to rely upon tactics that have worked in the past because they worked in the past. But we're not in the past anymore. It's just like their reaction to Trump and everybody's reaction to Trump, mine included. We reacted to Trump when he came down that escalator trained by our experience that we had up to that point of, oh, you can't say that. You know, he's not going to go anywhere. He's not going to make it through the primaries. He can't possibly win against Hillary Clinton because he's violating all the rules. He's violating all the things that we've known, tried and true conventional wisdom throughout the decades. And it was tried and true, but the world has changed. Our ability to perceive the truth has changed, and people are seeing that the emperor has no clothes and reacting accordingly. The only question is, how quickly will our institutions catch up to that? And when they do, that will be a good thing. Because what this does is it forces people to be truthful if they want to survive. 651-989-5855.
And 1035 FM.
Your live and local reactions to the news over the weekend. Robert Mueller turned in his much-anticipated report, and it has nothing in it. Nothing new, nothing noteworthy, certainly no evidence of collusion with Russia from the Trump campaign or Donald Trump himself or any of the people in his orbit. Indeed, any American whatsoever, like no American, no person even disconnected from Trump has been indicted or shown to in any way have collaborated with Russia to interfere with the 2016 election, which in and of itself, let's remember, the terms collusion and the notion of interfering in the election, those ideas onto themselves remain nebulous terms. What is it that we're even talking about here? We're told that some Russians paying for ads on Facebook that pop up in your Facebook feed, in your news feed, we're told that that is interference in the election. You need to point me to the person whose eyes were propped open and forced to read any of that. And, you know, I'll go even less extreme than that. Point me to the person who was on the fence. The person who was like, I don't know, you know, it's November, what was it? 6th was the election, so it's November 5th, the night before. Person is like, I don't know. I could go either way. You got Donald Trump on the one hand. You got Hillary Clinton on the other. I haven't been presented with a compelling reason to cast my vote one way or the other. Oh, what's this? Ding! On my news feed, a Facebook ad, a meme. Well, not, well, I'm a Trump person now. That Clinton, I can't deal with her. Point me to that person. The person who was actually influenced by anything that Russia did. I would love to talk to them. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Streaming at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and your iHeartRadio app. We're here 8 to 10 weeknights. You can join us at 651-989-5855. Brianne taking those calls and producing the show. Let's talk to Pat in Shoreview. Thanks for holding.
Yeah. You know, I think probably the most disheartening thing about this whole fiasco with, you know, alleged Russian collusion and everything else is the lack of integrity of the people at the top of the FBI.
Right.
I think that if they are not brought to justice for the various criminal conduct they had, you know, and it's going to be a tricky case in the fact that, you know, basically you're going to get them for lying to Congress or lying to somebody about something, lying to the FISA court. Unless they're brought to justice, it certainly could happen again.
Yep.
Certainly any candidate in the future is going to think, is going to have to worry about, like, the deep state and going against the deep state or being critical of, like, the establishment. If that means that the intelligence community is going to go after them.
I mean, think about this, Pat. Think about this. President Richard Nixon was forced to resign, the only president in the history of the United States who had to resign. Why? Because he got caught up in a scheme whereby he was a associate with or affiliated with, a party to, a break-in to a hotel room in order to find dirt, find information on his Democratic opponents. Compare that to the notion that you had, as you stated, top members of the FBI, members of the DOJ, a former Secretary of State and officials in her orbit conspiring, colluding to literally change the outcome of an election and then to overthrow and undermine the results of that election. Watergate is nothing. It is nothing in comparison to what we've seen from the left and the Democrats and Hillary Clinton in the past 2-3 years.
I know, and I think you might have left out the CIA and as far as being part of the conspiracy too, because I think John Brennan had an influence in pushing the dossier early on. And the scary part about it is, or the thing that's strange about is that the media was also complicit in all this.
Yep.
The Democrats and the media are pushing the same narrative in the fact that they're playing all these montages now on the radio about, about people saying, well, the Trump has to feel like the walls are closing in.
Yeah, right.
A half a dozen people to say that. It's a break the glass moment. And a dozen, media personnel are saying that. And that sort of thing. And impeachment's on the table now. And mm-hmm. it's going to be soon. It's only a matter of time. Mm-hmm. All this, it's like the narrative gets repeated, by the mainstream media. And, I don't know if when are people, until Trump got elected, I right now I have, whatever I see something on the mainstream media, I just have to say, we've got to wait a day or two before I'll take this as the truth. And if it's about Trump, now it's just about me at least.
Oh yeah.
I don't know about everybody else. Anybody else? There's you could put the CNN viewers in one pod, and they're not gonna. I don't know if they're ever gonna move mm-hmm. from CNN as far as they just want Trump gone for some reason. Orange Man Bad must be running through their head all the time.
The MPC meme, absolutely. It's automated. I appreciate the call, Pat. Appreciate the thoughts. And, indeed, one of the previous callers asked, are they going to learn their lesson from this? Are they going to have a come to Jesus moment? No, of course they're not. You know how we know that? I keep pointing to this example, but it's because it's so apt. Venezuela. You could also point to the Soviet Union, right? You could point to any failed socialist experiment. At no point, it's not as though things were humming along great and then all of a sudden it was a dystopia. Like, that's not how it happened. What it was that things kept getting progressively worse and worse and worse, and they just doubled down. They kept doubling down on the bad ideas and the horrible policies and the violations of rights and the clamping down on freedom. And that's what we have. We have a mindset that is fundamentally opposed, and we'll expound upon what that mindset is here later on in the program, but they have a mindset that is fundamentally opposed to truth. They're not interested in the truth. They don't value the truth. The truth is not of value to them. So why would they adjust in light of the truth? That's not what they're seeking. They're seeking a manifestation of their desires. They're seeking Aladdin's lamp. They're seeking a magic wand. They want to manifest their desires and their wishes into the real world. And the truth is an obstacle to all of that. Pat mentioned that he's not going to be able to trust anything that the media says from here on out. Liberal journalist, this is from USA Today. Liberal journalist Matt Taibbi was even harsher, calling the Russia collusion story WMD times a million. And what he means by that is, weapons of mass destruction, Iraq, the build up to the idea that there's weapons of mass destruction in there and they were never found. He's saying this is that times a million. He noted that the news media's credibility is a major victim. This was his tweet. Nothing Trump is accused of from now on, and remember, this is a liberal journalist. Nothing Trump is accused of from now on by the press will be believed by huge chunks of the population, a group that, perhaps thanks to this story, is now larger than his original base. As New York Times' Peter Baker notes, a full 50.3% of respondents in a poll conducted this month said they agree with Trump and Mueller, or that the Mueller probe was a witch hunt. 50.3% of people agree that it's a witch hunt, because it is. This is, and that's not even an analogy at this point. This is literally how you hunt witches, right? Like, you go back to Salem, right? This is how they hunted them. They just kept investigating, kept testing, kept prosecuting until the victim was dead. And then you knew for sure. 651-989-5855. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson, Twin Cities.
30 and 103.5 FM.
So now the question is, where do we go from here? Now that the Mueller report has been turned in, and we know that there is, after 2 years of extraordinarily thorough, combing the desert style searching, no evidence of collusion with Russia from the Trump campaign, the Trump administration, Trump himself, or indeed any American anywhere, didn't happen. Bob from Nebraska, who has no connection with Trump, did not conclude with Russia, according to Mueller. Now that we know this, where do we go from here? Well, there are a few people, a few Republicans in Congress who have a suggestion. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, 651-989-5855, the number to join us. From the Daily Wire. Nearly 2 years to the day after Representative Adam Schiff read into the congressional record unverified and salacious allegations about Russian collusion from the now discredited Trump dossier, senior Republicans are calling for his resignation. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy on Monday demanded an apology from Schiff and for the California Democrat to resign from his position as the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. Now, let's just pause to think about this. At the top of the hour tonight, one of the things I cited that we're going to keep coming back to is the decimation of the credibility of major institutions that we depend on in this country. One of those is the intelligence community. Adam Schiff is the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. Indeed, if the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee is not engaged in his job with sobriety and restraint and discernment and jealously protecting the integrity and the credibility of the intelligence community that he has oversight of, if he's not willing to do that, he does need to resign. This is exactly what ought to be called for. Continuing at the Daily Wire, Schiff owes the American public an apology, McCarthy said. Schiff has met the standard that he has imposed on other members of Congress when they should step back from their positions. He has exceeded that standard, and there is no question he should step down from the Intel chairmanship. Also on Monday, White House advisor Kellyanne Conway said Schiff ought to resign today over his continued insistence that President Donald Trump would be impeached or indicted. He ought to resign today, Conway said. He's been on every TV show 50 times a day for practically the last 2 years, promising Americans that this president would either be impeached or indicted. Adam Schiff should resign. He has no right, as somebody who has been peddling a lie day after day after day, unchallenged and not under oath, she continued. Somebody should have put him under oath and said, "You have evidence, where is it?" Donald Trump Jr. had earlier asked Schiff that he should face any repercussions for his lies. "It's not trolling when you're right," he said. That Schiff has been flagrantly lying to the American people and slandering the POTUS and me, that being Donald Trump Jr., for years of airtime. He should he not face any repercussion for the lies? And then they give several examples of things that Schiff has said over the years. Now, Schiff, of course, isn't the only one. He's just somebody who's in a key prominent position as the Democratic chair of the House Intelligence Committee. And he's been engaged in this for quite some time. And, you know, this is the part, and there's been other comments made by Trump and others along the lines of, and you don't often hear me, I'll just put this out there, you don't often find me harmonizing with Sean Hannity. Doesn't happen too often. Usually, you know, I'm out of sync. I'm a dissonant voice when it comes to whatever Sean Hannity is peddling on any given day. But in this case, I am 100% behind his analysis. His analysis from Friday night, go check it out on Facebook or on YouTube. Go look it up. What he had to say on this issue on Friday night was spot on. This is the catalyst that ought to produce investigations into everybody who was involved. They ought to investigate Strzok. They ought to investigate Schiff. They ought to investigate, you know, all the key personnel at the FBI and the DOJ. How did this happen? How does an organization, how does a network of organizations tasked with enforcing the law and upholding truth and fact above all else and serving the American people, how does it become completely obsessed and possessed with the need to go after the sitting president of the United States? Something is deeply and profoundly and no doubt criminally wrong with that picture. And we need to find out the full extent of it. We already have many of the pieces. We all already have many of the jumbo pieces of this very simple puzzle that we can put together. It's not going to take a whole lot of investigation, but that investigation needs to happen. And the people who are responsible need to be held accountable. Because when you accuse somebody falsely, you should face the consequences for having done so. Because by accusing somebody falsely, you are assaulting them. You have the intention of causing them harm. And that should not be abided. TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com.
1030 and 103.5 FM.
In light of all this, in light of the developments over the weekend, the turning in of the Mueller report, the end of Russiagate, the end of the collusion narrative as we know it, I have a question for you. I'm interested in your speculation regarding the future. How will history regard the Trump presidency? Now, we're still early in it, presumably. You know, after this weekend, the idea of Trump being reelected has more potency and carries a greater chance than it has for quite some time. You know, I haven't felt as though he was in a whole lot of trouble up until now. But at this point, wow. When you got 50.3% of people agreeing with him that the Mueller investigation was a witch hunt, when you've got liberal journalists tweeting out about how nothing the media says from this point forward is going to be taken at face value, and how, you know, basically the warning being, look, you guys cried wolf. And at this point, if there are any real wolves, if Trump does anything that actually does need to be have the people's attention brought to, you're not going to be able to do the job. And that's the exact same thing that I've been saying, by the way, that we actually do need a media. We actually do need a media to do the job of telling us what is true, of calling those in power on their BS. That is a key utility that is needed in our culture, needed in our discourse. We need discernment, and the media is supposed to help us have it. They're supposed to facilitate it. And in order for that to occur, the currency that the media has to deal in is credibility. In fact, the entire structure, the entire conception of a newspaper or a news organization is built around this premise. The idea that you have editors, that you have copywriters, that you have reporters, that you have all these checks and balances, this process in play, and that you slap your name, the name of your paper or your news agency, your television network, whatever it is, above your headlines, that the reputation that goes along with that brand, the newspaper of record, the New York Times, that carries weight and that people trust that name. And when people have trust in that name, then it translates to what is being reported so that they actually believe it. They actually accept it as being factual and researched and correct, and then make their judgments accordingly. Now, what has happened over many decades at this point, but it's gone into hyperdrive over the past few years, is the left has milked that credibility. They killed the goose that laid the golden egg. Because the old way of doing things, where you're actually checked facts and actually went out there and got corroborating sources and were certain that what you were publishing was actually true and credible and that you could back it up if called upon, that old way of doing things wasn't producing the golden eggs fast enough for them. The golden eggs, as they saw it, was harming Republicans, harming conservatives, harming Trump. They, especially after Trump won, they became so obsessed with getting those golden eggs, with getting that bombshell report that's going to lead to his impeachment, that's going to get him out of office, that's going to somehow vindicate the failed campaign of Hillary Clinton. They became so desperate for those golden eggs that they tried to cut open the goose that laid them. And they succeeded. And now it's dead. The press has no credibility. And that's extraordinarily problematic. So in light of all of that, how will history regard Donald Trump and his presidency? Now, there are a few points, you know, points of my own that I've came up with here on the fly that I think are context for how history may judge Donald Trump. And of course, you know, he may have a couple years to go. He may have 6 years to go. But certainly judging based upon the trajectory that we've seen to date, it seems pretty clear that he's likely to have a second term. And, you know, and a lot could happen in 6 years. So this is highly speculative at this point. But here are a few things that we do know that are certainly noteworthy and should be noteworthy 50 years from now, 100 years from now. Because, you know, keep in mind, not all presidents are remembered in detail. Not all presidents, you probably can't list them all off. I know I can't. All the presidents who have ever been inaugurated from the founding of the country. Many of them are more noteworthy than others for a variety of reasons. Some good, some bad, some mere coincidences of history because they happen to be president at a certain time. What will Trump be remembered for? Here's a few things, potentially. He arose as a turning point in the synergy between social media, a new technology, Hollywood celebrity, and politics. And, you know, this is something that Obama, to be completely fair, Obama was kind of the precursor to this. And in many ways, Barack Obama was the first celebrity president. Recall that he arose with effectively no real resume or genuine earned credibility whatsoever. He was a character that came onto the screen. Like, I remember when he first gave, I can't remember which year it was. It was sometime, probably 2004. Sounds about right, because I know I was in Iowa at the time. And he gave a speech at one of the Democratic National Conventions, and that was his first big exposure. And everybody reacted to this speech, and were like, wow, this guy commands a crowd. He speaks extraordinarily well. This guy could be president someday. And he went from that first impression of, this guy could be president someday, to being president. Like, that's basically on that case of, no, he gives a pretty good speech. Is the only reason why he went on to be elected senator of Illinois and then president of the United States. It's not because he did anything. It's not because he accomplished something. It's not because he had some sort of grand resume that qualified him for the job. It's because he was a celebrity. And Donald Trump is that. He's that, but he's more than that because there's the social media element. Where, you know, the Obama campaign certainly leveraged social media for the campaign as such, but Donald Trump is the first candidate and certainly the first president to utilize social media as a work around the mainstream, as a way to detour past the gatekeepers, to get his message unfiltered directly to his constituency, his voters, his followers, the public at large. And he has done so extraordinarily effectively, not just during his campaign, but as we've seen throughout his administration thus far as well, and there's no doubt that he'll continue to do so. That is unique. That is historic. That is a turning point for how politics works. And if for no other reason, Donald Trump should be remembered by history for that. Secondly, what we've been talking about so far tonight, what we spent the entire last hour talking about, this news, the Mueller report, it represents an unprecedented non-stop investigation from the moment that, from before the guy was inaugurated, from the moment he won the election. We now know, we now have put the pieces together. We now know that the immediate reaction from those within the deep state, from many of those within the top leadership within the FBI and the DOJ, their first response was, we need an insurance policy. We need a contingency plan. We need to do something about this guy. We need to get him out. And from there was born this investigation and the other tangential investigations. And it has been nonstop every day since. Ultimately yielding nothing. But for what purpose? You know, there's a piece, we didn't get to it last hour, and I don't have it up here anymore. But there's a piece, I'm going to bring it up because this is a point worth making. Politico put this out. The headline that they currently have on this piece is Democrats demand Mueller's full report by next week. That's the headline. But it was changed. This headline has been updated. It was updated about 10 minutes before we went on the air tonight. Actually, about 10 minutes before this hour, it was updated. The prior headline, because you can check these things, right? You can look at the URLs, and I also happen to copy and paste the headline from earlier in the day when I was doing show prep. The previous headline was, Dems begin searching for post-Mueller strategy. Post-Mueller strategy. Now, what does that tell you? And, you know, I think they realized that they tipped their hand here, and that's why they changed the headline. The investigation was in and of itself a political strategy. That's all it was. That's all it ever was a political strategy. So now that the investigation is over, at least the Mueller investigation, what's their post-Mueller strategy? And some editor probably realized what they were betraying with that headline, and so they changed it to Democrats demand Mueller's full report by next week. But this is the way things are now. This is the way things run, is that we now have, you know, unless something changes, unless these people are held accountable, as we talked about at the end of last hour, then this is apparently going to be the new normal, whereby potentially the party out of power is just constantly investigating whoever won the election on trumped up charges, no pun intended, for the duration of their term to try to undermine them and cast doubt as to their motives and ruin their credibility and stymie their agenda. Is that going to be acceptable? Is this going to be the new normal, or is it going to be an aberration? I think that'll be something that history won't know. Trump deserves recognition for the negotiations he's had with North Korea. Now, thus far, they've been fruitless on the whole in terms of providing any sort of lasting solution to the tensions there, but by virtue of the fact that there have been negotiations, is in and of itself historic. Barack Obama didn't do that. George W. Bush didn't do that. Bill Clinton didn't do that. Presidents going back to the time North Korea was a thing haven't done that. Donald Trump did that. Open negotiations with North Korea. Another little bit of trivia that will certainly be noteworthy for historians when looking back at Donald Trump. He did drop the mother of all bombs, lest we forget. This is something nobody talks about anymore. But the MOAB was dropped very, very early in his presidency. And so much, it was so early in his presidency that a lot of us were like, oh my Lord, is this going to be, is this his thing? He's just going to start bombing countries just randomly? And of course, he has not, thankfully. But he certainly should be noteworthy for that. And of course, the last thing I have on here is the wall debate. The debate over the wall. Now, regardless of where you stand on that, regardless of whether you're an immigration hawk or you're more lenient or you think the wall ought to be built or not built, this moment, this conflict, this turning point in our nation of what are we going to do about immigration is something that I believe will be looked back upon by historians as a historic pivot point in the direction of the country, for better or worse. Now, I can't tell you whether it will be for better or for worse, but I imagine it will be noteworthy. So what are your answers to this? How will history regard the Trump presidency? 651-989-5855. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM.
1130 and 103.5 FM.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson. Been talking about the news over the weekend, the Mueller report, the whole lot of nothing that's in it, and the reaction, the fallout from all parties concerned. including your reaction. 651-989-5855, the number to join us. Let's talk to Ted in Minneapolis. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Walter. This is Ted here.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm the biggest Magma guy around. You know, I wasn't on board originally, but, you know, I got on board. But I think overall, the Trump presidency has been a train wreck. You know, national debt's out of control. The allies are in disarray. And, you know, we need a wartime president. I don't see anybody in the Democratic field who could be a wartime president. But I think John Kasich is the man. And I think the Republicans somehow need to pivot to him, forget about his primaries. We need somebody that can kind of semi-unite the country. And
you think Kasich could do that?
Yeah, I think John Kasich is the guy. I think Trump, the train wreck is...
So I'm very confused by your call, Ted. I'm just going to be honest with you, because you cite the national debt, which, of course, I'm right there with you. Like the continuing, doing absolutely nothing about Obamacare, doing absolutely nothing about entitlements, the governing through continuing resolution, the deficit, the debt, you know, all of that. We're whistling past the graveyard if we don't address those things. And we certainly have addressed those things on this show. But the idea that John Kasich is going to fix any of that, what evidence do you have? I mean, he's never taken a hard line on any of those issues.
Well, I think he could unite the country. And right now, the country's just shattered. You know, like, if he could unite the country, then they could attempt to make an effort to solve the problem, which right now, there's just not even a chance.
All right, fair enough. Appreciate the call, Ted. Certainly a unique insight. I think Ted gets our most unique insight award. We'll have to fashion one. I don't know what we're going to make it out of. It's going to be cheap, I can tell you that. It's not going to hold up under stress. You don't want to leave it out in the rain. And we will play the music before you're done with your acceptance speech. Absolutely. All right. So another little, you know, if it wasn't enough, you know, just kind of like pure bliss and joy to witness the reaction out to this news over the weekend, the frosting on the cake from Politico. Michael Avenatti, you remember this guy? The attorney who shot to national fame for representing adult film actress Stormy Daniels in her case against President Donald Trump, was arrested Monday in two separate cases of alleged financial crimes on both coasts. New York prosecutors accused Avenatti of trying to extract more than $20 million from Nike by threatening to inflict financial and reputational harm on the company. Now, that doesn't sound in character for Michael Avenatti at all. I refuse to believe it. You mean to tell me this guy's a grifter? This guy's a scam artist? This guy lies? Recall the role that Avenatti played, not just in the Stormy Daniels fiasco regarding President Donald Trump, but also, more recently, the confirmation hearings of Brett Kavanaugh. Avenatti was a key player in one of the most absurd, a couple of the most absurd accusations leveled against Brett Kavanaugh. So is it at all surprising that the guy who stood alongside the gal who accused Brett Kavanaugh of heading up a gang rape club in college that went completely unnoticed for 30 years, is it in any way surprising that that guy, that gal's lawyer, has now been charged with trying to defraud Nike, basically trying to extort them? Avenatti, a frequent attacker of Trump who flirted with a 2020 presidential bid that ain't happening, is also facing separate bank and wire fraud charges in Los Angeles, authorities said. Avenatti told reporters Monday evening that he was confident he would be fully exonerated, according to the Associated Press. He spoke after appearing in federal court in New York, where he was released on $300,000 bond. So hopefully that's the end of that. Hopefully that is the last time that anything Michael Avenatti says is given any sort of credibility, even by the deeply incredible mainstream media. Let's talk to Michael in Eagan. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call, Walter.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know about that Ted guy. John Kasich?
I know.
That guy is a bloviating, self-righteous fool, as far as I'm concerned. What's he going to do for America?
I don't know. I honestly don't. I have never understood Kasich. I'll tell you this much about Kasich. As a guy who, you know, as a former never Trumper myself, John Kasich was accused by some of us of being the reason why we have Donald Trump. So perhaps people who are OG MAGA, people who were with Trump from back in the day, actually ought to tip their hat to John Kasich, because what he did was in a completely self-serving manner. He held out, he stuck in the primary and helped keep any alternative to Trump from ascending and being able to effectively challenge him during the primary. And not because he had any chance whatsoever of prevailing, but because he was so full of himself. He had so much ego that he wouldn't drop out. He was one of the last people, if not the last, I think, to drop out.
Yeah, I had a few points on some things you talked about earlier about historically Trump's presidency. I think one thing that really stands out is he's not part of the club. And I think that irks a lot of the swamp people in Washington, because you've got your never Trumpers and your Democrats, and here this guy comes along and he kind of steals the thunder. And I think about the Bible verse where if you're lukewarm, I'm going to spit you out of my mouth.
Right.
And Trump came along and he was pretty bold.
Yeah, right.
He came out there and he threw this stuff right out, and the American people responded. And my last point is, I don't know that the media really exists anymore. If you break down and look at who owns CNN and CBS, I think those are just all bought and paid for propaganda arms. You really have to seek out, go on the internet and grab your information from various places, because this thing with the Democrats, I just hope they keep going. They look like absolute lunatics,
right.
And I don't know how much fuel they can keep running on. With now, they're even Klobuchar's little bit there during the news break was, well, we don't know what was about the obstruction, and even the Washington Post.
Yeah.
Well, he wasn't convicted, but there was no collusion, but there was no exoneration for obstruction.
Right. Which, to a previous caller's point, if there's no evidence, that is exoneration. Like, we don't start, like, this whole notion, I appreciate the call, Mike, as always, this whole notion of Trump isn't off the hook. You know, the people who are saying that, and I put out a social media post like to this end today, people who are still clinging to this notion of that Trump isn't off the hook, you are betraying your bias. You are telling the world by advocating that idea that Trump isn't off the hook, Trump hasn't been exonerated, he isn't off the hook, that your standard is not due process, your standard is not presumption of innocence, your standard is not sobriety and truth and fact and due process, that you are working from a presumption of guilt. He's guilty of something. We talked about this earlier in the program. He's guilty of something, and we got to keep digging and keep investigating until we find out what it is. That is profoundly un-American. You know, there are a few things that truly are, like, categorically, fundamentally un-American, anti-American, and that idea, the presumption of guilt, and the let's keep digging, let's keep searching through the papers, metaphorical or actual, until we find evidence of a crime. That's about as un-American as it gets. Matt Walsh had this to say in line with Mike's point regarding the media. Matt Walsh tweeted, "There is no news media. Such a thing does not exist. We all need to finally understand and accept that. The people masquerading as journalists and news anchors are ideological agents, narrative crafters, propaganda merchants." And he is correct. Now, this is problematic. And I've tried to make this point a couple of times tonight, and, you know, in metaphor comes to mind to try to really hammer it home. The media being non-existent, being incredible, being untrustworthy, and not serving its purpose, which is to provide us perspective, provide us with clarity of understanding and facts to base our opinions on, their failure to fulfill that role, to maintain their credibility, has created a vacuum in the market that cannot be easily filled. You know, it would be as if all of a sudden, overnight or over a period of time, there was no auto maintenance industry anymore. Like, garages started to just collapse and fail, and you know they were doing shoddy work across the board, coast to coast, and you couldn't take your car anywhere to get your oil changed or to fix your replace your brakes or to get something fixed. Just overnight, that expertise was gone. It would leave us all significantly worse off than we were before, because we wouldn't be able to rely upon that expertise. This is what we call in capitalism, what we call in economics, the division of labor. Just as a mechanic provides a valuable division of labor, he provides expertise which I can rely upon in order to make my life easier and more convenient, and I'm able to exchange value for value in exchange for that convenience. In a similar fashion, the media is supposed to do the same thing. The media is supposed to shortcut my discernment. They're supposed to make it easier for me to discern what is true and what is false, so that I don't have to spend 5 hours a day trying to figure it out. And I have said, and other people have said, and it's been said by callers tonight, that, you know, we're just going to have to, and I think Mike said this as well, we're just going to have to, you know, discern the truth on our own, consult a variety of sources, and figure out what's true and what's false, and use our own judgment. And that's true, but it's also untenable. Who has hours a day? Like, I get paid for it, to some extent, for a couple hours every night to look through the news and try to discern the truth and then come on here and give you my perspective, my digested version of what has happened throughout the day. But most people don't have that time. Most people certainly don't get paid to do that, right? So you're going to have to take time, just like you would if there was no mechanic to take your car to. You're going to have to take time that you otherwise would apply to other areas of your life and effort and try to acquire knowledge and skills that you didn't otherwise need, in order to do this job on your own and not as well. Because there's a cap, you know, different people have different affinities, you know, in terms of their talent and their skill. And not all of us have the affinity toward auto maintenance, no matter how hard we study it, right? We just might not be our thing, might not be up to the task. And in a similar sense, we don't all have an affinity for discerning the truth of the news of the day. We need a trustworthy media to rely upon for that task. They have failed, which leaves us in a very, very information poor state. And that is a sad place for us to be for our democracy. You might even say it undermines our democracy. 651-989-5855, Twin City. You know, I cited earlier in the program that the Trump administration and Republicans have failed to do anything about Obamacare. They failed to repeal it, as they told us they would, for 8 years. I remember the chants. I was holding the signs. I was at the rallies. I remember. I know what I saw. I heard what was said. You said you were going to repeal it. You had 2 years to do it, and you didn't. But the struggle against Obamacare and the race toward Medicare for all, socialized medicine, putting us under the boot of the state, may not be inevitable after all. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Streaming at TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and your iHeartRadio app. We are here 8 to 10 weeknights. It's always great having you with us. Thanks for making us part of your routine. You can contribute at 651-989-5855. Brianne taking those calls and producing the show. Check this out from Politico. The Trump administration on Monday said it supports a federal judge's ruling that the entire Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, should be scrapped, signaling a shift in the Justice Department's position and alarming Democrats who vowed to oppose the move. There are a few things that give me a more contented feeling in my belly than the phrase alarming Democrats. I love it. The Department of Justice has determined that the district court's judgment should be affirmed, three Justice Department lawyers wrote to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is now considering the case. The United States is not urging that any portion of the district court's judgment be reversed. The GOP-led states that initially brought the suit, Texas v. United States, had called for the entire law to be invalidated because Congress eliminated its individual insurance mandate penalty, an argument that swayed U.S. District Judge Reed O'Connor, a George W. Bush appointee. The The Trump administration had previously argued that only elements of the ACA, like its protections for patients with pre-existing conditions, should be struck down, but that other parts of the law could stand. House Democrats, who had separately planned to introduce legislation on Tuesday that would fortify Obamacare, denounced the Trump administration's new legal position as unconscionable. And here comes the rhetoric. Are you ready for this? I bet you can already imagine. I bet you could probably tell me what Frank Pallone, Democrat from New Jersey, representative, had to say about this. He said, millions of Americans will, can you fill in the blank? Millions of Americans will lose their health care immediately if this decision is upheld. The guy is the chairman of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, and he continued to say in a statement, we will do everything we can to defeat this attempt to rip away Americans' health care. And listen, you know, I'll say this, a couple of things, actually. Good on Trump, good on his administration for taking this legal stance and coming alongside this ruling and affirming it and saying, yes, indeed, the ACA, Obamacare, should be overturned in its entirety. I wish we would have had that level of conviction when we had the ability to put forward legislation to repeal and replace Obamacare. But, you know, better late than never. I'll take it, number one. And number two, the Democrats' very predictable reaction to news like this, which is people are going to lose their health care. People are going to be kicked off their insurance. It's going to be difficult for Republicans to combat that rhetoric, to combat that line. You know why? Because they've adopted it. They've adopted it. They have, indeed, a big part of the reason why Obamacare hasn't been overturned is because Republicans have been making the case for Obamacare, for various parts of it, and for the moral premises upon which it is based. And they've been talking in terms of people getting, quote, kicked off their health care, unquote. As if, you know, the absurdity of this, this is the same thing as pretending as though if we were to get rid of or greatly reform the public education system, that it would just be like the Dark Ages overnight, that the conscientious choice of every actor within the economy, from teachers to parents to would-be administrators, what have you, that our collective choice as a culture would just be to throw up our arms and be like, well, I guess we're not going to teach our kids anymore. I guess we took a shot at it. You know, we made an attempt to have an education system, but if the state's not going to do it, then I guess our kids are just going to be dumb. Who honestly thinks that that would be the reaction if overnight, for whatever reason, there wasn't a public education system tomorrow? That there wouldn't be some market replacement quickly and efficiently filling that void? And in a similar sense, when you talk about Obamacare or you talk about any government entitlement, when you talk about Obamacare as such, government health care, government-run health care, the idea that getting rid of it or reforming it or cutting it to one degree or another is going to, quote, kick people off of their health care, kick people off of their health insurance, is to pretend that the natural human instinct is to lie down and starve until you die. That that's how people act. That when presented with their own need, people's natural human reaction is to drool all over themselves until they starve to death. But it turns out that's not the natural human reaction. It turns out that when you have a need, your natural human reaction is to fulfill it, to produce, to go get it, to get after it. That's the instinct. And again, hearkening back to the division of labor we talked about last segment, some people are better at certain things than others. And in a market where you're incentivized to bring your best to the table so as to most benefit yourself and your family, the people who are really good at coming up with solutions for healthcare will do so. And they will offer it at a competitive price in order to get a larger share of the market. And healthcare costs will go down and access will go up. This is the argument that Republicans need to be making. This is the counter to the Democratic response to the position that the Trump administration has taken today. And I wish, you know, if I could have one wish from Aladdin's lamp tonight, the one wish would be, I should probably think about this more before I say this. But in the moment that I just passed, the wish would be that Republicans take on this conviction that we are not going to adopt the Democrats' talking points in our debate about health care. That we're not going to concede the point that changing the system kicks people off their insurance. That what we're really doing is clearing the field, tilling the soil, and planting the seeds from which a crop of innovation and productivity and value is going to bloom. 651-989-5855. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson,
2030 and 103.5 FM.
Last Wednesday, Amherst College in Massachusetts released what they call a common language document for their students, which lays out definitions about everything from capitalism to drag queens. This coming to us from the Daily Wire. The document was released by the Office of Diversity and Inclusion in an email to students, and this is what they had to say about it. They said, this project emerged out of the need to come to a common and shared understanding of language in order to foster Now, let me pause halfway through that sentence. A common and shared understanding of language. Dictionary? Anybody? Dictionary? Like we have that. You're a couple hundred years late on this idea. We have a common and shared understanding of language. You can find it in a dictionary, which presumably you have a copy or two of at Amherst University, Amherst College in Massachusetts. Be that as it may, the project emerged out of a need to come to a common and shared understanding of language in order to foster opportunities for community building and effective communication within and across difference. It includes a list of carefully researched and thoughtfully discussed definitions for key diversity and inclusion terms. This sounds like satire, but it is real. This is a real thing. The document attempted to define capitalism, calling it an economic and political system in which a country's trade and industry are controlled by private owners for profit rather than by the state. Now, up to that point, that might have been lifted right out of the dictionary, right? Like, I don't have any major qualms with that definition. I would add a thing or two, but I'll take it. But they continue. This is their definition of capitalism in a university common language document meant to presumably educate their students. This system leads to exploitative labor practices which affect marginalized groups disproportionately. What? So hold on. Wait a minute. So your definition for the word capitalism includes your political bias regarding the effect of that system. Okay. They don't stop there. The term legal/illegal, as applied to immigrants, is deemed a highly racialized term to describe a person's presence in a nation without government-issued immigration status. Highly racialized. Let me ask you this, because, you know, there are some highly racialized terms and language, of course, and memes and what have you, that have permeated our culture. Is there anything about the term legal or illegal as applied to immigration that is not objective? In other words, is there a law in question that can somebody point to the law that is either being followed or not followed? And therefore justifies the use of the term legal or illegal? Spoiler alert, the answer is yes. We are actually talking about real laws that are being broken, therefore referring to the people who break those laws as illegal makes a whole lot of sense, right? Like, let me put it in a context you can understand, lefty University, Amherst College person from Massachusetts. If there was someone who had a gun illegally, who was disobeying the gun control laws in your state, would you have any objection to calling them an illegal gun owner or describing them as being in illegal possession of a weapon, would that be highly racialized to describe them as such? Why or why not? Now, I know I'm engaging in the fruitless endeavor of trying to apply logic to their thinking here, but I just can't help myself. They go on to describe the term as not an appropriate noun or adjective, this being legal or illegal in reference to immigrants, not an appropriate noun or adjective to describe to an individual, often misused to designate certain undocumented members of a society, specifically people of color, to deny their contributions, right to exist, and recognition as people with certain national boundaries. Now, right to exist? Now, listen, as I've articulated a number of times on the program before, I am by no means an immigration hawk, certainly in the context of the current discourse. Like, the building of the wall is not my top issue by far. Immigration is not my top issue by far. But the idea that immigration concerns are about the right to exist, of course you have the right to exist in the country you came from. You don't have the right to exist in my house. Closing argument. Twin Cities News Talk.